is immediately engulfed by a swarm of people, eager to congratulate me on my performance. I laughed when several asked me where I performed locally, as they were eager to catch my next show. I eventually made my way back to Lexi, who was jumping up and down in excitement. Squeezing me so tight I could barely breathe, she screamed in my ear, "You were freaking amazing! Oh my God, Brooklyn! You could have heard a pin drop in here during your performance, and I swear I saw a few people crying! You're a rock star!" she exclaimed. Releasing me, she turned to face the people seated in the audience around us. "My best friend is a freaking rock star!" she screamed at the top of her lungs, entirely too loudly for such a relaxed venue. I smacked her on the arm. "Quit it, Lex. You're embarrassing me. Not to mention yourself," I laughed.
"I'm declaring myself your official musical agent," she said, eyes distant with thoughts of our future fame and glory.
"Alexi, don't you think you're getting a bit ahead of yourself? You do realize that I'm still going to become a lawyer, right?" Lexi snorted, grumbling under her breath about wasted talent and missed opportunities. Oh well. Singing had always been just a hobby, and though it recently may have become a therapeutic outlet, I doubted it would ever transition into a path to stardom. As exhilarating and enlightening as my performance had been, I didn't see it going anywhere professionally. A familiar deep voice rasped into the microphone, immediately catching my attention. Butterflies erupted in my stomach, as my eyes drank in the sight of the beautiful dark-haired man sitting on the stool I'd just vacated. His eyes scanned the room restlessly, as if seeking someone particular in the dark crowd. "Well, I don't think I'm going to be able to top that last performance." Did he mean mine? "But I'll do my best. This song is dedicated to a friend I worried I'd lost for good. For a long time, I thought it was impossible that this person might still exist out there." He paused, clearing his throat and running a hand through his hair, a sure sign that he was nervous. "But I'm happy to say that sometimes we get second chances in this crazy life. Sometimes the things we lose are returned to us. Sometimes we're lucky. So yeah, enough of my bullshit ramblings. This is The Scientist by Coldplay." Finn's voice was hauntingly beautiful as he sang along with his acoustic guitar. He'd never looked more attractive, but I could tell by just a glance that something was wrong. There were circles under his eyes dark enough to rival mine before my daily Sephora intervention. It was clear he hadn't been sleeping. He looked utterly worn out, and it set me on edge immediately. As the lyrics washed over me, I wondered about his strange song dedication. Who was he talking about? It was probably irrational for me to feel jealous, considering there was nothing remotely romantic between Finn and I. He'd made it clear on more than one occasion that he was strictly my friend, and, with the exception of a drunken near kiss in the bathroom at Styx, he'd never even implied that he found me attractive. "The man whore doesn't even want you. Talk about an ego bruiser." I wasn't too proud to admit that his lack of attention over the past week had stung. I hadn't heard from him at all, and I couldn't help but be reminded of the way I'd avoided him at the beginning of the semester. Oh, how the tables had turned, how the mighty had fallen. How many more cliches can I use in a row? I was getting a taste of my own medicine. Okay, that was the last one, I promise. And unfortunately for me, it was the disgusting store-brand grape-flavored liquid cough syrup my foster mom used to shove down our throats when we couldn't sleep at night. It was obvious that Finn had chosen this song, one that cried out for redemption and second chances, purposefully. It was equally unobvious why he'd chosen it.
The lyrics were clearly an apology, a plea for someone's forgiveness. And I was near desperate to figure out whose. Somewhere along the line, he'd started to matter to me. Evidently, the feeling was not mutual. But he'd been there for me last week after my breakdown. Granted, his jokes were so pathetic they could barely be considered consolatory. Still, if he needed someone to talk to, I would try not to be a cold-hearted bitch for at least 5 minutes and offer him some comfort. I would be his friend. As soon as he stepped off the stage, women with too much makeup and too few clothes surrounded him. They reminded me of the seagulls that would swarm any flyaway scrap of food on the California beaches my mother had so often taken me to as a child. She'd called them rats with wings, laughing as she'd tossed yet another potato chip into the sky to increase their rabid fervor. Come to think of it, Finn could probably throw a dirty sock into this swarm of girls, and they'd kill each other in the animalistic race to win it. He was laughing, in his element as he soaked up their attention. The sadness that had been etched onto his face as he performed had retreated back behind his eyes, and that trademark panty-dropping smile. Or maybe I'd been seeing things. I rolled my eyes and turned back to Lexi, who was watching me closely. "You like him," she said, surprise written across her face. "No, I don't," I snapped, forcing a laugh as if she was ridiculous to think such a thing. "And we've already discussed this, haven't we?" "No, we talked about you sleeping with him and tossing him aside, like you do all the others. Not that there have even been any others lately, but we'll get back to that later." She stared at me, as if trying to decode my brain with just the power of her eyes. "You like him, as in, you care about him. I never thought I'd see the day." Her voice was laced with something like awe as she continued to look at me. "I don't know what you're talking about, Lex. You know better than anyone that I don't do relationships, or commitments, or even emotions." "Then why haven't you been with anyone else since you met him? Explain that." She stared at me, triumphant. "You know, you're right. It has been too long," I said, pushing my seat back and standing up. "I think I'll go find someone to go home with right now." Sadness and regret instantly flashed in Lexi's eyes. "I'm sorry I mentioned anything, Brookie. Stay with me," she pleaded. "Don't do this again." "Take my guitar home for me, kay?" I tossed over my shoulder, ignoring her as I turned to head for the bar. A quick glance toward the stage assured me that Finn was still busy with his adoring fans. With one blonde on each arm, he certainly wouldn't be in need of my friendship tonight. I mentally scoffed at my earlier thoughts of comforting him. Clearly, I'd been mistaken. When I reached the bar, I singled out the guy who'd be taking me home within 30 seconds. It was a talent I'd possessed for years. One glance told me everything I needed to know about a person. My bedmate for the night was an easy mark. He was at the bar, laughing with two male friends, which told me he was laid back and likely single. He was drinking a beer, so he was probably straight and wouldn't be so hammered that he'd have any problems performing in the bedroom. His light green plaid button-down was casual, but showed off the muscles in his broad back and mirrored the color of his irises. I could have him back at his apartment naked within the hour if I played this right. Approaching slowly, I made sure to ignore him as I walked up to the empty bar stool next to his and leaned over the bar. I waved in the bartender's direction to signal that I was ready to order, then pushed my dark curls over my shoulder in a gesture designed to appear impatient. If my approach alone hadn't caught plaid shirt boy's attention, the fragrance of my shampoo would do the trick. I bought it on special order, and it smelled like apples and cinnamon, something that apparently attracted boys like crack. I think its male enticement abilities would be surpassed only by bacon-scented shampoo, and I was pretty sure John Frieda didn't make that. When the bartender reached me, I ordered a bottle of Sam Adams and paid him quickly. Turning around, I faced the stage and leaned back against the bar, taking a deep pull on my beer. I could feel the weight of plaid shirt boy's gaze on my profile as the cool bottle rested against my lips and I swallowed slowly. The tip of my tongue lightly traced the glass rim, and I hid a smile as I heard him clear his throat roughly and shuffle his feet. "Hey, I'm Landon," he said, moving in front of me. "You were pretty amazing up there earlier." He held out a hand for me to shake, smiling in a friendly, "I'd like to see what color your panties are," kind of way. His blonde hair was lightly tousled, and his eyes were gorgeous up close, green with flecks of hazel throughout. Perfect. "Brooklyn," I said, smiling flirtatiously and placing my hand in his. This was going to be even easier than I'd expected. "Don't you know it's not good to drink alone, Brooklyn?" He laughed. I sidled a glance at him, winking. "Good thing you're here to keep me company, then." He grinned, and I downed the rest of my beer. 2 beers, courtesy of Landon, and 30 minutes later, I was feeling buzzed and ready to leave. I was anxious to get away from Lexi's accusations and Finn's flock of women. I'd purposefully avoided looking in his direction, then immediately scolded myself for doing so. If I couldn't even watch him flirting with other girls, he was even deeper under my skin than I'd realized before. I needed Landon to help push Finn from my mind as soon as possible. Maybe then I could finally get back to normal. Part of my mind was screaming at me, even as I allowed Landon to lead me toward the exit. "Is this the person you want to be, Brooklyn? Do you really want to go back to being the guarded, selfish, self-preserving whore you were a few months ago? What about all the progress you've made with therapy and Lexi and Finn?" Just thinking his name had me pushing away that annoying inner voice and snapping back to reality. It was suddenly easy to lace my fingers through Landon's and follow him to the exit, once again eager to leave. Near the club door, Landon bumped into a table of his fraternity brothers and stopped briefly to talk. He introduced me, laughing and blushing as his brothers made crass and utterly unoriginal comments about him getting lucky tonight. I rolled my eyes and waited impatiently for him to move on. When nearly 5 minutes had passed, I tapped Landon on the shoulder and told him it was time to leave. Turning toward the door, I cast one final glance behind me and, to my dismay, locked eyes with the one person I'd been determined to avoid. I grinned half-heartedly at Finn, but felt the smile drop off my face as I registered the anger in his eyes. His dark blue irises were steely with rage as they glared at Landon, who'd just placed his hand on my ass in an attempt to usher me out. When I didn't move, Landon leaned down and kissed my neck. "Come on, babe. I thought you wanted to go." His breath was too warm and smelled like beer. It made my skin crawl. There were no butterflies or chills or stuttering heartbeats, just an intractable sense of wrongness. I ignored the feeling, pulled my neck away from Landon's lips, and tore my eyes from Finn's. He'd ignored me for an entire week, and now he was furious that I was leaving the bar with someone? Well, he could go to hell as far as I was concerned. Either he had some kind of multiple personality disorder, or I was missing some crucial information. "Yeah, I'm ready. Let's go," I said, setting my shoulders determinedly and ignoring the ache in my chest as I allowed Landon to pull me through the exit. Thankfully, it wasn't a long walk to Landon's apartment. He lived about 3 blocks from the club, in the same neighborhood as me. I tried to remind myself how hot he was as we stumbled through his front door, his lips fused to mine. When his tongue entered my mouth, I responded on autopilot, unable to engage on a deeper level. Groaning in frustration, which Landon no doubt assumed was passion, I pulled off his shirt and ran my hands over his chest. His six-pack was a chiseled work of art. If I'd met him months ago, I'd have gladly spent the night tracing my tongue along each indentation in a show of my appreciation. But tonight, I wasn't going to waste any time. I needed him to clear out my mind. Lexi used to say that I treat sex like a trip to the masseuse or the chiropractor. Like a romp between the sheets was nothing more than a good backstretch or spine cracking. I'd always laughed when she'd said it, but deep down I knew it was true. I'd used sex to scratch an itch, nothing more. Until I'd met Finn and started to care. I knew instinctually that sex with him would be different. I also knew that what I was doing with Landon right now couldn't hold a candle to the fantasies I'd had about being with Finn, let alone compare to what actually sleeping with him might be like. My gray tank top hit the floor, followed quickly by my bra. Landon's hands cupped my breasts, too clumsily and roughly to even remotely turn me on. He was slobbering on my neck, murmuring between open-mouthed kisses. "You're so fucking hot, baby." "Don't call me baby," I said immediately, muscles tensing under his touch. "Okay." The slobbering continued as I stood unresponsive, my hands at my sides. "You're so fucking hot." His hands reached for the button on my jeans, and I knew I had to put a stop to this before he went any further. Glumly, I admitted defeat. His touch couldn't drive Finn out of my mind any more than alcohol or denial could. I was screwed, and not in the literal good sense of the word. "Landon, stop." To his credit, he did stop immediately. Some guys probably would have been assholes about it, complaining or even trying to force me to continue. But Landon was understanding when I told him I needed to leave. "It's cool," he said, grinning and running a hand through his messy blonde mop of hair. "You ever change your mind, though, you know where to find me." I laughed as I put my clothes back on and said goodbye. He wasn't a bad guy. I knew he'd be a good boyfriend to someone someday, just not to me. Thankfully, the walk home was short. I hadn't worn a jacket to the bar, and the temperature had dropped in the hours since I'd left my house. I rubbed my arms with my palms, trying to work some warmth into my limbs as I turned onto my block. To my surprise, a familiar black pickup truck was parked in front of my house. I approached cautiously, noting that the truck was still idling and that Finn was probably sitting inside. I'd stopped just short of the passenger window when I heard the engine cut off abruptly and the driver's side door flew open. Finn rounded the front of the truck in a blur, grabbing me by the arm and planting my back flat against the passenger door before I could even formulate a protest. He glared at me, his face mere inches from mine. A muscle worked in his jaw as he tried to get control over his anger. "What do you think you're doing? Let me go, Finn!" I glared back at him, tugging my arm from his grasp. "I don't know what the hell your problem is, but I'm going to scream if you don't back off." "You don't know what my problem is? That's perfect." He barked out a laugh, but there was no humor in it. His hands ran through his hair in frustration. You are my fucking problem, B. He was calling me B again. He'd only done it once before, so I'd dismissed it. But here he was, using it again. No one ever called me B. It had been my mother's special nickname for me. I decided to let it go, for now. It seemed I had to pick my battles tonight. "What the hell does that mean?" I asked, incredulous. "Did you fuck that guy tonight?" "That is absolutely none of your business. Now let me go." "No!" Finn roared in my face, his anger reaching a new high. "I can't let you go. I can't. And believe me, I've tried really fucking hard. It's impossible. You're impossible." He blew out a harsh breath. and some of the anger cleared from his face. He seemed defeated suddenly. "I didn't know how hard this would be. I wish I could say that if I'd known, it would have made me stay away from you. But I can't, because I know that's not true. There's literally nothing that would have kept me from coming back to you once I'd found you." I had no idea what he was talking about at this point. His eyes were wild with a desperate intensity I'd never seen before, and he looked like a man close to his breaking point. Honestly, he was starting to frighten me, and I was dangerously close to delivering a swift kick to his balls and making a getaway. As I was contemplating escape options, he startled me by gently cupping my face in his hands. Anger shifted to tenderness so rapidly, I couldn't pinpoint the exact moment it had happened. His blue eyes pierced mine with a look of steadfast resolve, as if he'd suddenly made a decision about something. And I had the overpowering urge to run far, far away from whatever he was about to say. "I stayed away from you all week, trying to convince myself that I didn't need you. I knew I should stay away from you, that I shouldn't pursue this. But then I saw you leaving with that douchebag at the Blue Note, and I lost it. I can't even... The thought that..." He broke off, unable to even say the words. "Did you fuck him?" He ground each word out as if it caused him physical pain to expel them. "No," I said, glaring into his dark blue eyes. "Not that it's any of your business. I can fuck whoever I want, Finn. You certainly do." "I haven't been with anyone since I met you." "What?" I pushed away my shock and scoffed. "Yeah, right. And even if that's true, why would I care? It's not like I give a damn who you're fucking." In a flash, the anger was back. "Don't do that. Don't trivialize what's between us. Don't think you can pretend with me. Your little indifferent act might work with everyone else in your life, but I see through it. And you know what, B?" He paused, leaning in so close our noses grazed. "I see fear. You're scared shitless that you feel something for me. 'Cause God for fucking bid, you actually had to let down those walls you've built around yourself and let me in." My mouth gaped open like a fish as I tried to conjure a response, a denial, even a laugh. Anything to steer this conversation into safer waters. My mind was reeling, though, and I couldn't form a single sound. I simply stared at him, adrift in a state of shock. Years of shutting out my emotions had left me utterly incapable of processing his declaration, let alone how I felt about it. Maybe Finn recognized this about me, though, because he continued to speak, undeterred by my silence. "Since the second you woke up in my arms on the sidewalk that day, it was only a matter of time until we got here, to this moment. We were inevitable. You know it, I know it." "You barely know me, and if you did, you might not like me so much anymore." "I'm sure you've heard of my reputation." I swallowed my embarrassment, looking anywhere but at him. "It doesn't matter, B." "But," I protested. "Look, I can't fucking explain it, okay? I'm no good at this. All I can tell you is that it feels like the most natural thing in the world for me to be near you. Like I was put on this earth just to breathe your air and tell you how beautiful you are. To make you laugh at my dumbass jokes and hold you in my arms when you're sad. And I don't want to control you or own you or change you. I just want you, no matter who you are or what your past is. I don't care about the other guys or anything that happened before we got together, because all that shit made you you." He inhaled deeply. "Being near you, Brooklyn, it's like breathing. I don't have a choice about it. I just have to do it, or I know I won't survive very long." His eyes were so startlingly earnest as he spoke the words. There was no way I could doubt the truth behind them. I'd thought he was done, but apparently he still had more to say. When he continued speaking, his tone had gentled and his gaze had grown serious. "Even when I'm not with you, I can feel myself being drawn wherever you are, like a goddamned physical tether connects us. And it's not going away. If anything, it's getting stronger the more time I spend with you." He swallowed roughly. "I've never felt anything like this before, and I know you feel it too," he said, his voice low. "It's undeniable, like a magnetic force, like gravity, and it's not something I can control or change or stop. It just is." His eyes softened as he recognized the raw fear in mine. "Don't be scared, B. Don't you know I'd never hurt you?" "I know that," I whispered, realizing it was true as the words left my mouth. He'd been protecting me since the day we met. From fire hydrants, from Gordon, even from myself. He slowly leaned toward me, resting his forehead against mine and closing his eyes. "I don't think I can stay away from you anymore," he admitted quietly, exhaling a breath and trying to shake off some of the tension in his shoulders. "Then don't," I said simply, my mouth twisting up in a smile as his eyes popped open. His blue eyes stared into mine for a fraction of a second, evaluating whether or not I was serious, and then his mouth crashed down against mine. His lips were demanding, his tongue tracing the seam of my lips and seeking entrance almost immediately. He backed me even more firmly against the truck, his body pressed flush against mine. My hands found their way into his unruly dark hair, and I pulled him closer, standing on my tiptoes to reach him. He smelled deliciously of fall again, and tasted even better. I grumbled a complaint when his mouth left mine to trail kisses along my jawline and down my neck. He laughed at the sound, a dark, sexy chuckle that nearly set my panties on fire with want. Needing more, I hooked a leg around his waist and tried to pull him closer. He must have shared my thoughts. His hands immediately cupped my ass as he lifted me from the ground, allowing both my legs to wrap around his waist as he held me pinned against the truck. Tugging on his hair, I managed to get his lips off my neck and back on mine. Usually, when I kissed someone new for the first time, there was an adjustment period, a few fumbling moments spent learning how his mouth moved and adapting to it. It wasn't like that with Finn. It was like our mouths knew each other, like my lips had been designed to fit exclusively with his. I wasn't a religious person. I didn't believe in past lives or reincarnation. But if someone had asked me in that moment if I'd ever lived before, I would have said yes, because I must have known Finn before this lifetime. Kissing him was like coming home after an impossibly long journey, one so long I'd not only forgotten what home looked like, but that it even existed in the first place. Our mouths explored, a passionate melding of lips and tongues and teeth. I wanted to drink him in, to bottle him up and carry him around with me, so I'd never be without this feeling again. This sensation of completeness, of utter rightness, that made me ache with the need to laugh and weep and lose myself in him. I gasped when I shifted in his arms and felt the strength of his arousal through his jeans, finally seeming to realize that we were in a compromising position in the middle of the street. Finn pulled his face away from mine and looked into my eyes as he tried to slow his breathing. His eyes were dark, hazy with desire, and surely matching the look in mine. "We have to slow down," he whispered, kissing my forehead. I groaned in response. Laughing, he set me down on my feet and wrapped his arms around me. My arms twined around his neck, and my head nestled into the crook of his neck. A feeling of contentment filled me when his chin came to rest on top of my hair, and I thought back to the first time we'd hugged like this. I remembered thinking how well we fit together, like two missing puzzle pieces. After tonight, that feeling was only amplified. "Come on," he said, detangling our limbs. "Let me walk you to your door." I opened my mouth to protest, but he cut me off. "Don't even try. I'm walking you to your damned door, B." We walked quietly up the stairs, stopping outside my patio door. "You could come in, you know," I said, stretching up onto my tiptoes to plant a kiss on his lips. Finn groaned and pulled away. "My self-control is hanging by a thread here. Please don't tempt me." "Fine," I shrugged, and turned to the door, not wanting him to see that his denial confused and hurt me. No one had ever turned me down before. "Your loss." "Hey," he said, spinning me back around to face him. Tilting my chin up, he forced my eyes to meet his. "Believe me, I want nothing more than to stay with you. I want you pretty fucking desperately, if I'm being honest. The fact that you'd even doubt that is crazy." Suddenly, appallingly, my eyes were filling with tears. "Maybe I am. Crazy, that is. I'm fucked up, okay? You don't know the first thing about me, and if you did, you'd probably just run." I tried to break away from the grasp he had on my face, but he held firm. "I can't give you what you want. A relationship. I can't make you any promises," I hiccuped. Finn leaned in and slowly kissed each teardrop from my cheeks. "First of all, I don't want to hear you call yourself crazy or fucked up or anything like that ever again. Secondly, did I ask you to make me any promises?" "No." His eyes radiated sincerity and warmth. "Nothing has to change. Well, other than the fact that I'm going to be kissing you as often as you'll let me, because your mouth is amazing. Seriously, I may have to go home and write a song about it. We'll play it at our next show. I'll call it Ode to Brooklyn's Orifices. It'll be an instant top 40 hit. Just you wait." I deteriorated into giggles. He was so ridiculous. "I hate you," I sighed, my laughter gradually subsiding. "Impossible," he grinned, pressing a chaste kiss to my lips and watching as I opened the door to my apartment. "I'll call you tomorrow." "I'm sure that's what you tell all the girls," I teased. His face turned serious. "B, there are no other girls. There's never been anyone real for me except you." A wistful expression crossed his face. "It's always been you." My heart stuttered in my chest at his words, and I gripped the doorframe to keep myself steady. "Good night," I whispered, overwhelmed. "Good night, B." He winked at me before turning to walk down the stairs. I closed the door and brought a hand up to trace my slightly swollen lips, the only tangible proof I had of what had just happened between us. Otherwise, I might have dismissed it as some kind of misguided fantasy. Could I do this? Could I get involved with Finn and remain emotionally detached? He said he wasn't going to stay away from me anymore, and I didn't want him to. He was my friend, and all I knew was that I'd missed him this past week. But could I sleep with him without letting all my walls come crashing down? I felt like I'd been asking myself that question for months as Finn and I slowly circled each other. And now that we'd finally collided, I still wasn't sure what my decision would be. Sure, I was getting better, going to therapy, thinking about my mom and facing up to my past. That didn't mean I was normal, and I was certainly not well-adjusted enough to give myself to another person in a committed relationship. I needed to sort out my own shit before I could even consider taking a leap like that. As if that wasn't enough of a hurdle, I also doubted I would ever get to a place where I could be fully honest with Finn about my past, and he was too pushy to ever be content with being left in the dark. This relationship was a disaster, a ticking time bomb waiting to explode, even in theory. I was confused, and I definitely needed time to think about everything. I was also too tired to deal with a gamut of emotions battling for my attention. Channeling Scarlett O'Hara, my all-time favorite literary lady, and clearly a formative influence on my development, I decided I couldn't think about the Finn situation right now. I'd think about it tomorrow. After all, tomorrow is another day. Chapter 9. Bare Walls. I was afraid of the top bunk. It was too high off the ground. At home, I'd had a pink bed. Mommy always called it my princess bed. She'd painted my bedroom to look like a scene from one of my favorite fairy tales, and the walls were covered with princesses and fairies and knights, and even a magic castle. The ceiling was painted with stars and clouds and a green sparkly dragon. Every night she'd read me stories before bed, and I would stare at my walls and pretend I was skipping down the paths of an enchanted forest or locked high up in the tallest tower of the castle. Sometimes Mommy and I would read a new story, and afterwards she would get out her paintbrushes and add to my walls. I wondered if another little girl was sleeping in my princess room now. I looked up at the chipping paint of the gray ceiling in my new room, stained with brown and green splotches. My foster mother didn't know how to paint castles or stars or dragons. The house was quiet. I'd been lying in my bunk for hours, but I couldn't sleep. I was scared of what I knew I'd see when my eyes drooped closed. I missed my room. I missed Mommy. I missed bedtime stories and the way she'd always sing as she painted. Slipping quietly down the bunk bed ladder, I adjusted the two long sleeves of my pajamas and padded out into the hall. I shared a bedroom with three other girls, but they were all older than me, and they snored and drooled and thrashed as they slept. I moved down the hallway on my tiptoes, trying not to make any noise. My foster mother got mad when she caught us out of bed at night, even if we'd had bad dreams. I'd been here for a few weeks now, but I'd learned the first night that there would be no bedtime stories or soft hands to tuck me in. When I reached the back door, I pushed it open cautiously. I knew from coming here almost every night that it would squeak if I moved it too fast. I stepped out onto the porch, my bare feet cold on the uneven wooden planks. Sitting down on the steps that led into the backyard, I propped my head in my hands and looked up at the sky. There were no stars here, no green sparkly dragons either. Just clouds and swirling darkness. "You shouldn't be out here, you know." I startled, my head whipping around to peer into the dark corner of the porch where the voice had come from. It was a boy's voice, deeper and rougher than my own. I curled in on myself, frightened as I watched him emerge from the shadows. "You don't have to be scared of me," he said, sitting down on the step next to me. Close, but not too close. "But you shouldn't be out here. It's late and it's cold." I stared at him. "You're the one who doesn't talk," he stated, looking down at me. I nodded. "I just got here a few days ago," he sighed sadly. "I can't sleep either." I looked up at the sky again, seeking a star, but there were still none behind the clouds. The boy didn't seem like he wanted to hurt me. He was older by a few years, probably 9 or 10. I was surprised he was even talking to me. Most of the older kids didn't want to spend time with a little mute freak. "Are you scared?" he asked softly. When I looked over at him, there was no teasing in his eyes, only kindness, and maybe some sadness, too. He understood. He hadn't asked what I was scared of, but it didn't matter. Fear is fear. I nodded slowly. "Want to hear a story?" he questioned, his voice unsure. I felt my lips turn up in a small smile. I nodded again, turning to look at him. "Okay." He took a deep breath, his forehead scrunching up as he thought about where to start. I doubted his story would be as good as one of Mommy's, but any story was better than none at all. The boy looked up to the dark sky before he began. "Once upon a time, there was a beautiful princess named Andromeda. When she was born, her parents, the king and queen, were so proud of her beauty that they bragged she was the most beautiful girl in their kingdom, in their country, in the entire world." The dark-haired boy looked over at me to make sure I was following his story. I watched him quietly, enthralled by his words. It had been weeks since someone had talked to me, really talked to me. The therapist visited each week, but she didn't say much. She just asked too many questions that I had no answers for. "When the sea nymphs heard what the king and queen were saying about Andromeda's loveliness, they were enraged. Until now, they'd always been the most beautiful creatures in the land, and they weren't ready to give up their title. The jealous nymphs begged Poseidon, the god of the sea, to send a terrible monster to Andromeda's homeland and to destroy the kingdom." I perched on the edge of my seat, my eyes wide as I watched the boy and listened to his fascinating tale. "The evil sea monster destroyed towns and killed villagers, and the king and queen were desperate to end the suffering of their people. They asked an oracle, the wisest man in the kingdom, how they could stop the monster's violent attacks." He gazed up at the stars overhead. "The oracle told them the only way to end the violence was to sacrifice their beautiful daughter Andromeda to the sea monster." I gasped. "They had no choice if they wanted to save their people. So they chained her to a rock in the middle of the ocean and left her there, alone and defenseless. When the monster appeared, with its razor-sharp teeth and evil red eyes, Andromeda knew she was going to die." The boy looked over at me, his blue eyes intense. "Suddenly, out of the sky, the hero Perseus appeared, flying on his winged horse Pegasus. He took one look at the beautiful Andromeda, fell instantly in love with her, and killed the evil monster before it could even touch her." The boy smiled softly. "The princess was reunited with her parents, who were thrilled to have their daughter back. The very next day, Andromeda and Perseus were married, and from that moment on, they lived happily ever after." The boy fell silent, his tale over. I'd never heard a story like that before, and I was fascinated. Mommy had never told stories about sea monsters, flying horses, nymphs, or gods. I had so many questions that I wanted to ask this boy. where he'd heard such a tale, and whether he knew any more like it. I wanted to thank him for sharing his strange story. But I still hadn't spoken to anyone since Mommy had. I reached up and touched the cut near my shoulder. Though it was wrapped with bandages and the doctor had put stitches in it, it still hurt. It didn't bleed anymore, at least. The rest of my cuts and bruises had faded. It was the only mark I had left to remind me of that day. I turned back to the boy and caught him staring at me. "You should go to bed. Your name is Brooklyn, right?" I nodded, climbing to my feet. The boy stood too, and he seemed shocked when I reached out and grabbed a hold of his hand. I squeezed tightly, hoping it was enough to tell him what I couldn't say out loud. "Thank you." He glanced down at my small fingers wrapped around his and gently squeezed back. "You're welcome." I smiled my first real smile in weeks and disappeared back into the house, leaving the strange, lonely boy in the dark. I woke with a start. I'd never had such a vivid dream about my time in foster care before. It caught me off guard, startling me with its clarity. Sure, I'd had vague memories of the boy who'd told me stories at night, but nothing had ever been that specific. It had felt so real, like I'd really been there, standing on that porch in the darkness. I absently ran a finger over the jagged scar on my collarbone. It was barely noticeable anymore, just a faint line of lighter pigmentation. The slightly raised, permanent mark of my past was the only physical remnant I carried from that terrible day. Thankfully, my emotional scars weren't nearly as visible. I bunched my down comforter around me more securely as I stared up at my plain white ceiling, instead envisioning a swirling canvas of cyan and cobalt, dotted with brilliant yellow stars and a luminescent jade dragon. I'd nearly allowed myself to forget the fairy tale world my mother had created within the four walls of my tiny childhood bedroom. The dream had brought it all back. Suddenly, the walls of my room seemed too bare. I had no pictures, no posters, not a single work of art, just plain white walls, as unadorned as the day I'd signed my lease. They'd never bothered me before. Or maybe I just hadn't noticed the bleak, impersonal nature of my living space. My clothes hung neatly in my closet, meticulously arranged by color and season. My laptop sat on a clutter-free desk. My carpet was vacuumed, and there were no piles of clothes or discarded papers anywhere. It looked like a ghost lived here, leaving no footprints as she moved through life. And, after all, wasn't that who I'd become? A girl with no family, no true friends, no emotions to speak of. Had I let myself disappear? Had I forsaken that little girl who'd believed in fairy tales and happily ever afters? Yes, because it had been easier. But I wouldn't do it anymore. I would find that little girl again, somehow. I would take back my life from the apparition I'd become. For the first time in years, I was thankful for one of my nightmares, and as I closed my eyes and drifted back to sleep, I smiled. I awoke the next morning near dawn, feeling more refreshed than I had in weeks. After making coffee, I sat on the roof and studied for a few hours. I had several exams coming up, and between Finn, therapy, and mysterious flower deliveries, I hadn't had much time to focus on my classes. When 10 o'clock rolled around, I walked into Lexi's room and grabbed the picture frame I was looking for from her desk. One pedicured foot dangled over the side of her mattress, and a fuzzy halo of red waves quickly disappeared as she yanked her fuchsia comforter up to block the light I'd let in. Growling, she blindly threw a pillow across the room at me, evidently pissed I'd woken her up. I laughed and closed the door gently on my way out. Looking down at the picture in my hands, I smiled. It had been taken last year at a Halloween party. Lex and I had dressed up as Mario and Luigi, and we looked carefree and happy in the photo, smiling so hard our lopsided black stick-on mustaches threatened to fall off our faces. Returning to my room, I opened a drawer in my desk and moved aside several neatly stacked spiral notebooks. At the bottom of the drawer, I finally found what I was looking for. 2 small faded photos of my mother were all I had left. They were time-worn and tattered, but they were precious to me. She looked beautiful in them, young and incandescently happy as she grinned at whoever had taken the photos. 1 was a portrait of her alone, leaning into the wind on a pier in California. Her arms were thrown up as she raced through the salty ocean spray toward the photographer. The 2 was a photo of the 2 of us. I was young, probably 3 or 4, and she held me suspended in her arms. She was looking at me with the pure, unadulterated love only a mother can give, and I was looking back at her like she was my whole universe. Because she had been. Tears filled my eyes, but they were happy. I'd been loved. I had the proof right here in my hands. And it had been neglected in that drawer, gathering dust, for far too long. Dashing the moisture from my eyes, I grabbed the 3 photos I'd collected and made my way to the driveway. I hopped into Lexi's car and drove straight to the closest photography store, where I knew I could have the prints enlarged and enhanced. After explaining exactly what I wanted, I left the photos in the capable hands of the shop owner and headed across town to Andler's, the only local mom-and-pop hardware store that was still in business. Most of the others had crumbled under financial strains in the recent recession, unable to compete when a national chain home improvement superstore had opened just outside of town. I wasn't much for DIY, but whenever I needed to buy replacement light bulbs or duct tape, I'd head to Andler's. I liked to think I was supporting the little guy. Considering the early hour and the fact that it was Saturday morning, I was unsurprised to find that I was the youngest customer in the shop by at least 3 decades. I was also the only female. As I walked in, 6 male heads swiveled around and performed a frank assessment of me. Equally quickly, they dismissed me and returned their attention to the items they were purchasing, undoubtedly assuming I was a lost sorority girl who'd wandered in by accident. I typically would have been peeved, but a glance down at my attire had me swallowing my indignation. My candy apple red, plunging V-neck emblazed with the words "Surrender, Dorothy" in black script across my chest was a far cry from the plaid lumberjack look most of these men were sporting. The wedged, strappy red sandals and slim black capris I was wearing probably weren't helping my credibility as a DIYer either. I obviously hadn't given much thought to appropriate outfit selection when I rushed out this morning. Head held high, I wandered further into the quiet store, looking for the paint section. It took me a few minutes, but I eventually found the colors I'd been searching for amidst what seemed like thousands of cardstock sample palettes. I grabbed the 2 I needed and made my way to the front counter, where a thin, balding, taciturn man of middle years was mixing paint. "Can you mix me a gallon of each of these, please?" I asked, handing over the 2 paint samples and attempting to subtly shift my shirt higher to hide the cleavage he'd begun to eye rather enthusiastically. His fingers lingered on mine as he took the cardstock from me, and I suppressed a shudder. The man, whose name tag read Hank, leered at me with a suggestive smile that was missing more than a few teeth before disappearing into the back room, presumably to mix my paint, or to grab some zip ties and rope that he could use to restrain and abduct me. It was pretty much a toss-up at this point. I was mentally calculating the probability of my being able to out-sprint Hank in my flimsy but oh-so-cute wedges when he reappeared, a can of paint in each hand. When he told me the total, I tossed a few bills down on the countertop and hurriedly grabbed the paint can handles. I headed for the door, not even waiting for my change in my hurry to get away from Hank's ogling, the less-than-friendly customers, and the uncomfortable store atmosphere. "Come back again real soon, sweetheart," Hank called after me as I used one hip to prop open the door. "Not on your life," I muttered under my breath. So much for my plan to support local small businesses. Next time I was totally going to Home Depot with its brightly lit aisles and plethora of cute employed college boys in orange aprons eager to fill my every need. Okay, maybe not every need, but at least those that involved paint and hardware. I finally managed to swing the door open, elbowing my way outside and struggling to balance both the paint and my purse while extracting my car keys. I was looking down, cursing under my breath, when a large hand closed over mine and grabbed both cans of paint before I could even react. Startled, I jumped about a foot in the air and my purse dropped to the pavement, exploding on impact and sending everything from tampons to my cell phone flying in different directions. I watched forlornly as my favorite lip gloss rolled under my car and out of sight. The puddles riddling the parking lot all contained various forms of indistinguishable goo and piles of trash, ensuring that I would never again be putting that tube anywhere near my lips. "Well, at least you didn't scream this time," a familiar husky voice chuckled from behind me. Every muscle in my body tensed with anger, and I froze, still facing the car. "But seriously, B, we need to work on your reflexes if you're going to pee your pants in fear every time I approach you. It's either that, or you start wearing adult diapers, and I don't think that's going to work for me." His voice was threaded with amusement. I turned, exceedingly slowly, to face him. Or, more accurately, to glare at him. I unleashed my iciest look, the one typically reserved for ass-grabbers and would-be rapists who got a bit too friendly on the dance floor. Of course, it had no effect on him. He stood there, grinning like an idiot at me, looking more gorgeous than ever. His eyes crinkled, alight with humor, and something less easily defined. His toned arm muscles were on display as he held the paint cans aloft, the tattooed skin of his right bicep standing out prominently. I remembered the first time I'd seen the inky whorls that encased his upper arm, how I'd wanted to trace my fingers along the swirling patterns, followed by my tongue. "Brooklyn, pull it together. Jesus Christ." I took a harsh swallow to banish those thoughts and refocused on how pissed I was, hoping like hell he hadn't recognized the lust that had undoubtedly just flickered across my face. "Well, maybe if you would stop sneaking up on me," I yelled, launching myself into his space so I was nearly pressed against him and stomping one wedged sandal with indignation. "I wouldn't scream or drop all my things or lose my favorite lip gloss. I loved that lip gloss, Finn, and now it's in a gutter, a sticky, gooey gutter. And why are you even here? Why are you always here? Are you stalking me or something?" His lips twitched with amusement, and I could tell he was trying desperately not to laugh. "Did you just stomp your foot at me?" he asked, shoulders shaking with barely contained mirth. I glared at him and jerked my chin higher. I would not let him embarrass me. I would not back down. And I definitely would not continue to fantasize about kissing him until I ran out of air and passed out in his arms. "Shit. I don't think I've ever seen anyone over the age of 5 do that," he choked out, breaking down at last and throwing his head back to laugh at me. I smacked him hard on the arm, pivoted, and bent to retrieve some of my scattered belongings. Finn was wiping tears from his eyes and still chuckling when I felt him squat down beside me. Then it was my turn to hold in the giggles as I watched Finn Chambers, campus's very own mythical sex god and legendary badass, scooping up my tampons and shoving them into my purse like they were on fire or dripping with arsenic. When everything, with the exception of one tube of sexy mother pucker, was back in my purse, we stood up and faced each other. I was still muttering under my breath about rude boys and the loss of my lip gloss when Finn stepped forward into my space and tilted my chin up so I was staring into his eyes. Words died on my tongue, my brain fizzled into static, and all I could think about was last night. My legs wrapped around his waist as he pressed me into the side of a pickup truck, his lips roaming down my neck, his mouth kissing away the tears that tracked down my cheeks. His eyes captured mine and held, the smoldering desire I saw burning in them, telling me that he was thinking about last night too. One hand slowly lifted to stroke my cheek, his fingers skimming lightly over my cheekbone, in a soft, almost reverent caress. The other hand threaded into my long ponytail and, with a gentle tug, he pulled me closer. I went willingly, my anger long forgotten. His head lowered until his forehead was resting in the crook of my neck. He inhaled deeply, then let out a groan. "God, you smell incredible. Like cinnamon and apple pie. It should be illegal to smell the way you do." I let out a breathy laugh, which cut off sharply when I felt Finn's tongue trace slowly up my neck. I shivered when his lips reached my ear and he tugged at the lobe with his teeth. His hands moved to my hips, and he walked me slowly backwards until I was pressed between his body and the side of Lexi's car. "What is it with you and cars?" I breathed teasingly. His head lifted abruptly from its lavish appreciation of my earlobe, and he stared down at me, eyes suddenly serious. "It's got very little to do with cars and everything to do with you. Doesn't matter where, I'm always going to want you be. Every time I see you, it takes everything in me not to drag you against the nearest wall and taste that perfect pink mouth of yours." His hooded gaze dropped to my lips. His words sent another shiver through me, and I had a sudden realization that if he was this sensual in a public parking lot, he would be a different creature entirely if... Okay, when? We got behind closed doors. My thighs clenched together at that thought, and I squirmed a bit under his heated gaze. "My very own caveman," I drawled in a perfect, much rehearsed southern drawl that would make Vivian Lee proud. He smirked roguishly, and then, before I could react, his mouth captured mine. His hands gently cupped my face with a tenderness that belied the demands of his lips. My mouth parted on a gasp, and his tongue sought mine immediately. I began to respond to his kiss, my hands twining up to grip his broad shoulders. When my tongue stroked gently against his in return, Finn groaned and pulled away, his breathing labored. Resting his forehead against mine, his blue eyes were full of tenuously leashed passion. He closed his eyes and pulled a deep breath in through his nose, trying to calm himself. I smirked, enjoying the effect I'd had on him, and he stepped back to put a few feet between us, as if our close proximity was too tempting for him to remain in control. "What's with the paint?" he asked, voice rough as he gestured toward the forgotten paint cans by my feet. "I'm going to paint my bedroom," I responded with a casual shrug, as if it was no big deal, something I did every week. As if I were one of those girls, like Lexi,
who spent hours on Pinterest looking at recipes, crafting ideas, and the 99 ways you can upcycle old newspapers into your very own fashion line. I had never and would never be that girl, planning my imaginary wedding 12 years in advance and picking out color palettes for my dream house. Never. Finn raised a questioning eyebrow at me, but didn't comment on my sudden desire to redecorate. "Do you have rollers?" he asked. I stared at him blankly for a minute, then looked away a bit sheepishly when I realized that, in my hurry to leave Andler's, I'd forgotten to grab paintbrushes and rollers. I guessed I'd be making that trip to Home Depot after all. "No," I said, crossing my arms defensively over my chest, mentally daring him to make fun of me. There would definitely be no more makeout sessions if he did, and I made sure my glare told him exactly that. He smiled as if he could read my thoughts, and for once didn't tease me. Smart choice. "What about brushes? Coveralls? Painter's tape? Drop cloths? An edger? Primer?" He continued to rattle off paint supplies, none of which I had purchased, until I couldn't even remember them all. I looked at him perplexedly, a bit taken aback. Who knew painting required so many materials? "Okay, so maybe I forgot a few things," I mumbled, not looking at him. His muffled laughter brought my eyes back to his face. "I'll meet you at your place in a few hours," he sighed. "I have to go grab some supplies." "I don't need your help," I snapped automatically, trying to cover the flash of anxiety that had streaked toward me at his words. "You're not my boyfriend, and I'm not going to fuck you as a reward if that's what you're thinking." "I helped Ty paint his bedroom last month, and shockingly, I didn't fuck him after," he growled menacingly. His eyes, which had been filled with warmth only seconds ago, were now flinty with anger. "And no, I'm not your boyfriend, but last time I checked, I was your friend. Friends help each other out, especially when one friend doesn't know her ass from her elbow when it comes to painting." "Okay," I agreed, casting a caustically acquiescent smile up at him. "You can help." "You are the most infuriate—" He broke off and took another calming inhale. It seemed he had to do this at near constant intervals when he was around me. "I don't know why I bother," he muttered. "Because of my sparkling personality?" I asked, laughing a little at his blatant frustration with me. "Somehow I don't think that's it," he said dubiously. "I'll be at your house by 2. I nodded in acceptance. He was right. I didn't know my ass from my elbow when it came to home improvement. I could use all the help I could get. "What are you doing here anyway?" I asked, glancing around the near-empty parking lot. His bike was parked a few spaces down from Lexi's car. "I was headed to the diner," he said, with a nod in the direction of Maria's, the tiny breakfast place that abutted Andler's and hadn't been redecorated since the early 1970s. The retro feel gave the restaurant character, though, and it was a popular venue for hungover co-eds after a long night of partying. Their pumpkin pancakes were legendary during the fall season. My stomach rumbled at the thought, and, with a final longing look cast at the restaurant, I glanced back at Finn. If he weren't there, I would have happily treated myself to a short stack smothered in whipped cream and syrup. As it was, I'd have cut off my left foot before going in there now and eating with him in front of half of the student body. If I did, I might as well paint a sign across my ass that read, "Finn Chambers tapped this last night," given all the gossip our morning appearance together would prompt. If we were going to get involved, I wanted a signed contract, possibly in blood, stating that no one would find out about us. My reputation was tarnished enough without adding a tryst with Finn to the list. His lips twitched in amusement as he evaluated me.
"Don't suppose you want to get pancakes with me?" he asked, a knowing smile playing out across his face. "No," I blurted, my fast response a dead giveaway of my horror at the suggestion of such a date-like activity. "I mean, I have errands to run," I muttered, more subdued. "Right," he said, lips curled up in a sexy dark smirk. I wanted to pounce on him and punch him at the same time. He was fully aware of the effect he had on me. He was tying me up in knots, and he was enjoying it, the smug bastard. "I'll just go enjoy my pancakes alone, then. See you in a few hours." He winked, then turned and walked into Maria's, leaving me hungry for more than just breakfast. I slumped back against Lexi's car, drained from the interaction. Crap. I shakily loaded the paint cans into the truck and got behind the wheel. Taking a steadying breath, I determined not to let Finn get under my skin. Maybe I'd let him under my panties later, though. Damn, I'm such a slut. I felt like an emotional yo-yo, rejecting Finn one minute and kissing him the next. I wanted to slap some sense into myself. Instead, I did what I did best and pushed the thoughts from my mind. Starting the engine, I pulled onto Main Street and headed across town to the grocery store. I had to pick up some things to make dinners for the week, refill my birth control prescription at the pharmacy, and make it back to the photo store to pick up my prints, all before Finn got to my apartment at 2. A glance at the clock on the dashboard informed me that it was already past noon. I stepped on the gas pedal, speeding Lexi's car through several yellow lights in my haste. I did not want him to beat me to the house. Something told me that having Finn Chambers unsupervised in my bedroom wasn't a good idea. I was steering my cart down the aisle of the grocery store, gathering items for the week, when my cell phone rang. "Hello?" The only answer I received was in the form of heavy, disturbed breathing. "Stop calling me!" I growled into the phone. "Is this Gordon?" More breathing. "I don't know who the hell this is, but if you keep doing this, I will call the police. Got it, sicko?" The breathing stopped for a minute, and I thought the line had gone dead, but a quick glance at the screen showed it was still connected. Just before I hung up, I heard what sounded like faint laughter from the other line. It wasn't the gleeful laughter of a 12-year-old prankster with nothing better to do for amusement. It was a sinister laugh, menacing and full of dark promise. The laugh of a man I didn't know and definitely did not want to know. I disconnected the call and stood frozen in the middle of the grocery store. This was the second call I'd received. Then there was the deadly flower arrangement that had been delivered to my room. Could they be connected? Who wanted to scare me this much? It could be Gordon, but I doubted he would take things this far. And he probably didn't possess enough brain power to break into my apartment without leaving any traces behind. I placed a quick call to the police station, asking for Officer Carlson. When he answered, he half-heartedly assured me that while they had done everything in their power to discover who'd dropped off the flowers, they had no answers for me at this time. After telling me to take extra precautions in locking my doors and windows, and to call if any more suspicious deliveries appeared, he hung up. I'd considered telling him about the phone calls, but quickly decided against it. It wasn't like there was anything he could do to help. I somehow doubted that the paunchy, donut-loving officer had ever solved a case in his career. I didn't want to think about my phone stalker right now. I had enough on my mind, what with the dead sexy man arriving at my house in... I glanced at my cell phone. Less than an hour. Crap. Phone call forgotten, I rushed to the front of the store, paid for my groceries, and was on my way to the pharmacy within minutes. Grabbing my prescription, I headed to the photo store, which was, thankfully, located in the same plaza. My photos were ready, and they looked perfect. I had them enlarged onto big 24 by 36 inch canvases that would adorn my newly painted walls. I thanked the shop owner countless times before paying and lugging the three large photo canvases to the car, where I laid them gently in the back seat. Smiling, I raced home, eager to beat Finn there and start redecorating. Though it was well into the afternoon by the time I'd gotten all of the food put away, Lexi was still sleeping soundly in her room. I wasn't surprised. If napping were a sport, that girl would take home Olympic gold every time. I lugged both cans of paint and all three blown-up photos into my bedroom and cast an assessing glance around the room. The only pieces of furniture were my desk, chair, bedside table, and bed frame. I struggled to maneuver the heavy oak desk into the hallway for several minutes until Lexi appeared in my doorway, coffee mug in hand and eyes wide. "What are you doing?" she asked, her gaze moving from the displaced furniture to the cans of paint. "I'm redecorating." She stared at me like I'd said I was planning to tattoo a swastika on my forehead and join a cult that worshipped Cabbage Patch dolls. "Excuse me? I must have misheard you. I thought you just said that you, Brooklyn Turner, were redecorating your room. The same girl who told me that I was forbidden, on pain of death, from putting up wallpaper and cute decorations in the living room." I rolled my eyes. "You were going to paste a wall quote that said, 'Live, laugh, love,' in magenta 5-foot-tall lettering across the wall over our couch. You seriously didn't anticipate me vetoing that idea?" She harumphed in frustration, taking another sip of her coffee and realizing she wasn't going to win this argument. "So, how was your night with the Ken doll?" she asked, switching gears. "Was it everything you dreamed of and more?" She snorted into her mug. "Sarcasm is so not your strong suit, Lex," I said, smiling. I turned back to the desk and began yanking it toward the door once more. "And actually, nothing happened with Landon. I walked home." "What?" she exclaimed, surprise evident in her voice. "Why the change of heart?" I sighed. "Are you going to help me move this desk?" "Only if you tell me what happened with Landon." "Bitch," I muttered. "Fine. I just wasn't into it, okay? He was hot, but I couldn't clear my mind enough to enjoy it." "Clear your mind of what? Or should I be asking of who?" she pressed. I spun around to glare at her. "Before you even start, this has nothing to do with Finn," I lied. "Oh, you are so full of shit. Brooklyn Turner has a crush. I can't freaking believe this," she squealed, dancing into my bedroom and slinging an arm over my shoulder. "I've been waiting years for this to happen, and this is perfect. I've always dreamed of us dating best friends. Oh my God, we should all go to this party tomorrow." "Lexi," I yelled, cutting her off before she could start planning our double wedding, thus inducing one of my many panic attacks. "There is nothing going on between Finn and I. We're friends. FRIENDS, I spelled out emphatically, hoping she'd listen to me for once. "You let all your friends pin you up against the side of their truck and kiss you like that?" Finn's deep voice asked from the doorway. God damn it. Was the man incapable of just announcing his presence like a normal person? I groaned. Lexi spun around, spied him leaning casually in the doorway, and squealed happily. I think she actually may have started jumping up and down in delight, but I was too busy looking around for a rope to hang myself with to be sure. The small digital clock on my desk read 2:05. He was right on time, so I couldn't even be mad at him for eavesdropping.
You bitch! I can't believe you are selling me that just friends bullshit!
She smacked my arm and glared down at me. Haven't you heard of knocking? I snapped.
ignoring Lexi and blasting an icy stare in Finn's direction.
I did knock. No one answered, he said, glaring back at me. His voice was calm, but his eyes were stormy as they pierced mine. Nope, he definitely wasn't happy about my just friends comment.
You, me, details, later, Lexi demanded, still glaring at me.
Turning to Finn, a sunny smile crossed her face, and she sighed.
Be patient with her. She's emotionally retarded.
I let out a mortified groan, and Finn tried, and failed, to hold in his laughter as Lexi wandered into the hallway and disappeared. When she was gone, a thick silence descended on the room. A charge seemed to build in the air as Finn and I stared at each other, the laughter dying slowly from his eyes. He took a step toward me into the room, and I immediately stepped back, maintaining the space between us. A dark look crossed his face, and his eyes narrowed. Striding across the room, he was in front of me in seconds. I'd backed up until I was flush with the wall, with nowhere further to retreat, and he immediately caged me in with his arms.
Let's get something straight, he whispered, tone dark with something possessive and slightly scary. We are not just friends. We have never and will never be just friends. So stop twisting this around in that head of yours and making it into something it's not.
You said nothing had to change, I said defiantly, unwilling to accept his words.
I've always wanted to fuck you. You've always wanted to fuck me. Nothing's changed as far as I can tell, he said, a small smile crossing his face.
I don't want to fuck you. You are the cockiest, most conceited, arrogant asshole I've ever met. I wouldn't sleep with you if you were the last man left on Earth and we were single-handedly responsible for repopulating the planet.
My tirade was abruptly cut off as his mouth descended on mine. I responded to his kiss instantly, eagerly, in complete contradiction to my words.
Fuck, what was I doing?
I reeled back, and before I could stop myself, my hand shot out and slapped him across the face. I froze, stunned at my own actions. It was like my hand had acted independently of my brain. My face was a mask of shock, my eyes saucer wide as I stared at the blooming crimson mark on his cheekbone. I hadn't intended to hit him. I'd just been so desperate to put a stop to the kiss, to take back some control. Breathing hard, I was still mere inches from Finn's face. He looked equally surprised, but his face quickly morphed into something darker.
Just for that, I'm going to make you beg for it before I'll kiss you again, he vowed, rubbing a hand back and forth along his cheek.
You're going to be waiting forever.
I've heard that before, he said, a small smile turning up the corner of his mouth.
I suddenly remembered another conversation we'd had, after he'd saved me from Gordon, when I'd told him he'd be waiting forever for answers about my past. He'd simply looked over at me and whispered,
I've already been waiting my whole life.
I still didn't know what that meant. I'm sorry I slapped you, I murmured, lifting a hand to trace the red splotch on his cheek. His hand came up to cover mine, holding it gently against his face.
I really am emotionally challenged sometimes, I reluctantly admitted. Sometimes?
Finn lifted a skeptical eyebrow at me.
Okay, fine, all the time, I grumbled. Can we paint now?
Sure, he agreed, stepping out of my space.
As I walked around him to reach the desk, I lifted up on my tiptoes and uncharacteristically pressed a soft kiss to the angry red handprint on his cheek. I felt him smile as I pulled away,
and began tugging on the desk. Thankfully, Finn was a lot stronger than me, and he made quick work of moving all my furniture out into the hall. My bed was too big to move, so he pushed it into the middle of the room, stripped it of its bedding, and spread one of the drop cloths Finn had brought over it. He'd also brought over several rollers, white primer, painting tape, and white coveralls that he insisted we both put on. "You can't paint in that," he said, indicating my red V-neck and capris. I'd already traded my wedges in for a pair of ratty old tennis shoes. "Fine," I said, grabbing the coveralls, a tank top, and cotton shorts before heading into the bathroom to change. After slipping on the tank and shorts, I stepped into the massive white suit. It had been designed for an adult male, and it was ridiculously large on my small frame. The sheer amount of fabric dwarfed me, with at least a foot of extra material hanging down past each hand and gathering over my feet. I haphazardly pushed up the sleeves and struggled to zip up the front of the coveralls. As soon as my hands fell to my sides, the extra fabric tumbled back down and covered my hands. This was useless. I wouldn't be able to maneuver my arms, let alone paint an entire bedroom. I trudged back out into the bedroom, concentrating on not tripping over the extra material around my feet. Hearing the sound of Finn's choked laughter, I drew to a stop and slumped my shoulders. "This isn't going to work," I said, windmilling my fabric-swathed arms in circles in the air. "I look like an idiot."
"You're adorable," Finn said, a soft look in his eyes as he took in the sight of me swallowed up by the enormous coveralls. "Come here," he whispered, crooking a finger to beckon me over to him.
Crossing the room, I stumbled on the bunched fabric and fell forward. Finn's arms shot out and he caught me before I hit the ground, steadying me with his large hands resting on my shoulders.
"Let's fix you," he said,
squatting down in front of me and deftly rolling each long pant leg into a cuff I wouldn't trip over. He repeated this with the extra material of each sleeve, making sure I had full range of motion before releasing me. A funny feeling built in my chest as he adjusted my sleeves so painstakingly. There was something intimate about him dressing me, something that went beyond just friends, or even friends with benefits. I looked down at the top of his head and realized something that floored me. Finn really cared about me. Not just in a friendly way or an "I'd like to know what color your panties are" way. He actually cared. And it didn't feel impossible or ridiculous or even terrifying. To be honest, it felt pretty damn nice.
Chapter 10. Finger Painting.
We painted.
I turned on the Civil Wars, an indie duo whose music we both enjoyed, and we covered the walls with primer. The repetition of my roller brush striking the wall was soothing, and I could feel myself relaxing with each passing minute, finding comfort in the monotony and mindlessness. Finn began to sing along with the male vocal part, and before long, I'd unconsciously picked up the female verses. We sang and painted until there were no more walls left to prime, and the CD player had fallen silent after the final track.
"I didn't know you could sing until I saw you up there on stage last night. I thought I was hallucinating at first."
Finn laughed, breaking the silence that had descended on us.
"I don't really," I replied, turning in a slow circle to see if we'd missed any spots with the primer. We'd have to wait a while for it to dry before we could start covering it with the blue shades I'd picked out.
"That's not what it sounded like last night, or just now," Finn noted skeptically. "You've got talent. Why not use it?"
"Singing is something I do just for myself. I don't do it for the applause, or the audience, or the spotlight," I tried to explain. "It's an outlet for me, I guess."
Finn nodded,
This he could understand. "Why were you there?" I asked. It hadn't escaped my notice that he had his own band, with real fans and scheduled performances. He didn't need to be singing at an open mic night. "It's not exactly Styx."
"Styx is great for when I'm playing with the guys, blowing off steam," Finn said,
walking over to lean against my draped bed frame.
"But sometimes, when I need a reminder of what's important in my life, I need to play alone and reground myself. Music's one of the only things that can clear my mind."
"One of? What else works?" I asked, genuinely curious.
"Sex."
One side of his mouth curled up in a dark smirk, and he waggled his eyebrows at me playfully.
"Don't suppose you want to help me out with that method?"
I glared at him, but there was no heat behind it. His smile became a full-fledged grin, complete with dimple.
"What's all this about? The sudden urge to paint?" he asked,
switching topics abruptly and gesturing at the whitewashed walls.
"I needed a change," I said, shrugging.
I looked around this morning and realized how bare my walls were, how empty it made my life seem. Finn set down his brush and pulled off the paint-speckled plastic gloves covering his hands, making his way over to my desk, which sat in the hallway just outside my bedroom door. He gently lifted up one of the canvases I'd had printed earlier, the photo of Lexi and I in costume, and examined it.
"You look happy here," he said, smiling as he looked at the photo.
Picking up the second canvas, the one of my mom on the pier, he stilled, and his face grew serious.
"This your mom?" he asked quietly.
"How'd you know?"
"You look like her," he said. "The eyes, the smile. On the rare occasion you show yours. Even the hair. They're the same."
Warmth erupted in my chest at the thought that I might look a little like my mother. I wasn't like her in other ways. Not artistic, or forgiving, or kind. I didn't possess her open heart or her capacity for love. But if I looked like her on the outside, maybe it meant that buried deep down beneath my cynicism, trust issues, and jaded bitchiness, I had a little of her within me after all. Maybe if I looked hard enough, I could find pieces of her inside myself. Finn had moved on to examine the third picture, and he looked sad as he took in the sight of the little girl I'd once been, wrapped in my mother's arms. His eyes shifted to me, where I leaned against my bed frame watching him.
"You don't talk about her."
It wasn't a question.
"No." "I didn't talk about my parents for a long time."
"What changed?" I asked, genuinely curious.
"I met you."
That threw me for a loop. "What do you mean, you met me?"
"You were the first person I ever really talked to about my parents' death."
My mind was reeling. How could it be that Finn had never discussed his parents before the other night on the rooftop? Granted, I never really talked about my mother either, but he seemed far more adjusted and normal than I ever hoped to be.
"Do you want to? Need to? Talk, that is," I asked, taking a hard swallow to calm my breathing. Jeez, I was terrible at this. I didn't know the first thing about properly dealing with my own grief, let alone other people's.
"Do you?" He turned my own question around on me, pinning me in place with the weight of his intense stare. "Did I?" "I don't know. Sometimes I think that if I don't talk about her, it will be like she never existed at all. Like she's just some figment my psyche conjured, or an imaginary friend I dreamed up during my childhood. And other times, I think I'd rather not remember anything about her at all, because then it wouldn't hurt so damn much. I'd be free, normal, just like any other college girl. Worried about normal things like boys and homework and whether I'll be invited to the SIGEP party next weekend. But I don't think about those things. I think about death and loss and heartache. I wonder why people bother to fall in love when they know from the start that they'll be separated one day, whether by infidelity or distance or death. I took a deep breath. Slightly shocked, I'd just admitted all that out loud. I've never had the luxury of being normal, Finn.
Normal is boring, Bee. It's not something I'd wish for you.
He crossed the room to me, bringing one hand up to gently trace the line of my jaw.
Grief is a kick in the chest. It steals your breath, hits you so hard you think you'll never stand back up again. And it's not just because you're grieving death or heartbreak or loss. You're grieving change. You're grieving the life that might have been if it hadn't all gotten fucked up along the way.
His other hands joined the one holding my jaw, so he was cupping my face in his hands. I closed my eyes and turned my cheek to rest in one of his palms.
You could spend forever thinking about the things you'll never experience with your mother. Infinity, contemplating the memories she won't ever be a part of. But at some point, you have to let the life you should have had go and start living the one you've got, Finn whispered.
Tears spilled out from under my lashes, and he caught them with his fingertips before they could fall. Ignoring the fact that I was a paint-splattered mess, he cradled me against his chest, and his lips came to rest in my hair, bringing me comfort as I trembled in his arms.
Let go, Bee, he whispered.
And I did. After a time, my tears subsided, and I became very aware of the fact that I'd just had a full-blown meltdown in Finn's arms. I wanted to run. A month ago would have run. I'd have bolted as fast and as far away as possible. But now, I just moved a step back out of the circle of his arms and wiped the residual tears from my eyes. I don't know what's wrong with me. I'm not this person. I've cried more in the past 2 months than I have in, like, the last 14 years combined, I said, forcing a laugh. I'm sorry for falling apart like that.
You don't have to apologize.
I think the primer is dry enough for us to paint now, I said with a sniffle, walking over to the paint cans resting in the corner of my bedroom. Finn followed, quiet for once, and crouched down beside me as I shook up the dark blue paint. He grabbed the lighter shade of blue, and after shaking it thoroughly, he used a screwdriver to pop open the lid. So, I was thinking we'd paint the walls the sky blue color, and then make the ceiling the navy dusk color, I said, explaining what I'd envisioned when I'd picked out my color scheme. Like the sky at nightfall.
Bringing the view from your rooftop inside, Finn murmured intuitively.
Something like that, I said, smiling softly at him. It was weird how well he understood my messed up brain, like we were on the same wavelength all the time. We painted the walls first. The light cerulean I'd picked was perfect, like the cloudless sky on a crisp fall afternoon. It took nearly 2 hours, long enough for us to listen through 2 more full albums. We sang together again, and I could feel the tension and residual sadness from my breakdown melting away. Being with Finn was as natural as breathing. He didn't demand anything of me, didn't want me to be anyone other than myself. The time passed quickly, and I was silently grateful for his bossy insistence to help. it would have been a much longer process if I'd had to do it all on my own.
While Finn made a trip back to his house to pick up a ladder so we could paint the ceiling, I wandered into the kitchen, threw together some grilled cheese sandwiches, and grabbed a bag of corn chips. It was well past dinner time, dusk had fallen outside, and we'd been working hard for hours. The least I could do was feed the boy after everything he'd done for me today. We took a dinner break when he returned with the ladder, but quickly resumed painting. Lexi had vanished, assumedly to Tyler's apartment, and I'd never been more aware of the fact that I was completely alone with Finn in my bedroom. Granted, it was more of a disaster site at the moment, but still. Standing in an enclosed, semi-dark space with Finn Chambers and my bed was nearly more than I could take.
Don't think about him naked. Definitely don't think about both of us naked. Definitely, definitely don't think about both of us naked in my bed.
The more time I spent with him in that room, the harder it was to focus on the task at hand. Being this near to him for hours and completely unable to touch him was tortuous for me. Yet he seemed completely unaffected. Maybe I was the only one who felt the growing tension between us, filling the air with unspoken promises and unvoiced desires. He painted with a single-minded determination I couldn't match, evidently intent on finishing the project before the day ended. My arms were aching, my feet were sore from standing all day, and I'd been ready to call it quits hours ago. Between the darkness of the room, the hours of manual labor, and the exhausting battle I was having with my inner hussy, who wanted nothing more than to tackle him and show my eternal gratitude for all he'd done, I was ready to drop.
"Take a break," Finn suggested quietly.
"Am I that obvious?" I asked. I thought I'd been successful at hiding my growing exhaustion, but apparently he was more attuned to my body than I'd realized.
"Brooklyn, you're swaying on your feet. The ceiling is practically done. All that's left to do is touch up the edging. Lie down," he ordered, yanking the drop cloth off my bed to expose my comforter. I moved toward the bed in a daze, truly exhausted. It was past 10. We'd been painting for nearly 7 hours.
"Wait," he said, dropping the edger he was holding and walking over to me. I stilled, several feet away from my bed, and watched his approach. He had a smudge of indigo paint on his forehead and another by his jawline, places he'd likely touched absent-mindedly with his paint-covered hands. His dark hair was sticking up in wayward clumps, and it looked slightly sweaty. For some reason, I found that incredibly sexy. He was usually so put together, so self-assured. Finn looking like a bit of a disheveled mess was something I'd bet not many people had witnessed. I smiled at the thought.
"You'll ruin your bed if you get in like that," he whispered, coming to a stop inches from me.
He reached out a hand and tugged the front zipper of my coveralls, dragging it down so slowly, the breath caught in my chest. I don't know how he made stripping me of baggy painting clothes into something sensual, but I shouldn't have been surprised. This was Finn, after all. He could make just about anything sexy.
Except Crocs. No one can make Crocs sexy.
When the zipper reached the end of its downward journey, Finn lifted his hands and pushed the material from my shoulders. It slid off quickly, pooling around my feet in a white and blue splattered cloud, and leaving me in only my tank top and shorts.
"Step out," he murmured, taking one of my hands in each of his and guiding me toward him.
My heart fluttered in my chest, and I felt a swarm of butterflies explode into flight in my stomach. Staring up into his dark eyes, my hands found their way up to rest on his broad shoulders. His eyes were hooded, and I immediately saw the desire that swirled in their depths. My hand slid from his shoulders, around to the front of his coveralls, the residual paint on them leaving blue streaks in their wake. When my fingers found the zipper, they trembled. Finn leaned down slowly and pressed a kiss to the hollow of my throat. My hands began to move, drifting downward and dragging the zipper along with them. As my fingers traced slowly down across his stomach, I felt the muscles there contract, and an involuntary puff of air slipped out from between his lips. When there was no more tread left in the zipper, I slid my hands lightly back up to his shoulders, taking my time to graze each taut muscle of his abs and chest as I went. His head lifted from the crook of my neck, and he stared down into my eyes as I gently shoved the material of his coveralls off his shoulders. His eyes darkened even further, the cobalt irises nearly disappearing into the black of his pupils. The material dropped around his feet, revealing a tight black V-neck and faded gray jeans that looked like they'd been washed a million times and fit him like a dream. He was utterly still, watching me, waiting to see what I'd do next. "Step out," I whispered, echoing his earlier command. At my words, he took one stride forward and was on me, invading my space completely and hauling me up against his chest. His mouth crashed down against mine, and I lifted up automatically onto my tiptoes, determined to meet his kiss head on. I poured all my pent-up frustrations from the day into that kiss, letting my lips tell him in no uncertain terms what I'd never admit out loud, that I'd been suffering without his touch for hours and wouldn't, couldn't stand another minute without his hands on my skin. He groaned into my mouth, a sound that made me want to do cartwheels around the room because it told me he'd been suffering too. He was just better at hiding it, apparently. His hands were everywhere, skimming from my hips up my sides, just grazing the undersides of my breasts before moving away to explore the small of my back. His fingers lightly traced the exposed skin between the edge of my tank top and the elastic of my thin cotton shorts, and mine were fully ensconced in the unruly hair at the nape of his neck. His lips were relentless, his tongue unhesitant and proprietary as it entered my mouth, like he was reclaiming something that was already his. I tugged at his hair, trying to pull him even closer, to deepen his crushing kiss. I wanted more. His hand slipped beneath my tank top and traced along my spine, sending shivers radiating through all my limbs. I'd never felt like this, so out of control in my need to possess someone. And I'd certainly never before wanted to be possessed in turn. But right now, I had to push all of my normal hang-ups about sex from my mind, because Finn was invading my senses completely and using up all my brain power. When he was in my head, there was simply no room for anyone, anything else. I wasn't a virgin by a long shot. I liked sex a lot. It was my drug of choice after tequila. But this was different. It was all-consuming. A need like I'd never experienced rushed through my veins and demanded more of him. His hands moved again, and then my tank top was on the floor and I was standing before him in just my bra and shorts. Thank goodness I'd had foresight enough to put on my cute lace bra set from Victoria's Secret before I got dressed this morning. "Beautiful," Finn whispered, gazing down at me and dragging his thumb across my bottom lip. Before he could move it away, I gave it a playful nip with my teeth, and then traced my tongue lightly along the pad. He let out another throaty groan and pulled me against him again, so my nearly bare chest aligned with his. My hands slithered down his sides and found the bottom hem of his shirt, yanking it up impatiently when I realized I was too short to lift it over his head. He chuckled darkly and bent slightly at the waist, lifting his arms so the shirt could slide free. I carelessly tossed it next to me with no regard for my aim and watched as the black V-neck sailed into a pan of cerulean paint. "That's the second shirt of mine you've ruined," he grumbled in my ear, pressing kisses along my jawline. "I'm sure I'll think of a way to make it up to you," I breathed, gasping as his mouth moved over a particularly sensitive spot beneath my ear. Before I could react, I was lifted into the air, cradled in Finn's arms as if I weighed no more than a feather, and gently laid down on one of the paint-splotched dropcloths covering my hardwood floor. I could feel the slightly tacky wetness of the paint sliding over my bare back as he laid me down, but I quickly forgot about that as he settled over me, with one arm braced on either side of my head and his leg straddling mine. He kissed me again, and I leaned up into him so our chests were touching, skin to skin. My hands wrapped around his back, and I explored the solid muscles there, tracing their fluid movements with the tips of my fingers. I used my grip on his back to leverage myself, sitting up beneath him. He rose with me, leaning back on his knees and somehow never disengaging his mouth from mine as we moved. We kneeled eye to eye, our breathing ragged as we stared at one another. He stilled as his eyes flickered down to notice the light scar that marred my collarbone, and his eyes clouded over with more emotions than just lust. Something darker, harder, scarier filled his eyes as he saw the mark my childhood had left behind, but it was tempered by a tenderness that made my heart turn over. He was angry that someone had hurt me. He didn't know who or what or when it had happened, but I could tell from the storm raging behind those gorgeous cobalt eyes that he hated the idea of me bleeding for any reason. Someone examining my imperfections so closely should have embarrassed me, and likely would have, except it was Finn. He didn't look at me with pity or disgust. He didn't flinch away or ask probing questions. Instead, he leaned forward and gently kissed the scar, as if tracing it with his lips would make it vanish and take away the painful memories it was a permanent tribute to. I wanted to cry. None of the guys I'd slept with in the past had ever even noticed my scar, let alone tried to kiss it better for me. A pang of longing lanced through my chest, one I didn't understand and didn't want to overanalyze at that moment, not when there was a beautiful, half-naked Finn kneeling inches away. Taking him by surprise, I launched myself at his chest, and we toppled roughly backwards. He landed on his back, with me sprawled half across his body, my hands planted on his shoulders. Our shift had upset one of the paint pans we'd used earlier, and there was a sudden rush of cerulean liquid leaking across the dropcloth and onto our tangled limbs. I laughed as Finn realized what had happened, dipping my right hand into a paint puddle near his head, and then splaying my fingers wide across his bare chest. When I pulled my hand away, there was a perfect blue handprint over his heart, like some crazy tribal war paint. I giggled at the surprised look that came into his eyes, but my laughter cut off abruptly as they narrowed in a promise of retribution. "Don't," I half begged, trying to hold in more giggles as I watched him examine his decorated chest. His eyes shifted to mine, and in a flash he was sitting up, with my legs straddling his lap. We were pressed close, nose to nose. "Oh, you asked for it," he said, smiling roguishly as one hand snuck around my back and unhooked my bra with a quickness that could only be achieved with years of practice. I was so preoccupied with my disappearing bra, I hadn't noticed what his other hand was doing until it was too late. As his right hand tugged each bra strap down the lengths of my arms and threw it to the floor beside me, his left, dripping paint, trailed across my collarbone and between the valley of my now exposed breasts. I watched, mesmerized, as his long fingers deftly swirled the paint in blue patterns across my skin. His fingers streaked down to my stomach, circling gently and drawing a perfect blue ring around my belly button. I would have laughed if I hadn't been so unbelievably turned on. This gives a whole new meaning to finger painting. My own fingers dipped back into the paint by my sides, and I began to paint his body in whorls of color as I explored in turn, creating a labyrinth of blue that matched my own. His fingers felt like fire as they trailed along my skin, burning a path from my stomach down to the top of my shorts. My hands stilled on his chest, and my belly fluttered as his fingertips slid under the elastic, following the band around to the small of my back. With his hands hooked half inside my shorts, he pulled me flush against him. I felt the air leave my lungs in a whoosh as the apex of my thighs brushed against his arousal for the first time. Even through his jeans, I could feel how hard he was for me. A sound that might have been a moan escaped before I could stop it. I'd never been this out of control before. Sex had always been a well-choreographed dance, a predetermined sequence of actions with an established conclusion. This was different. It was wild, spontaneous. Finn wasn't playing by any of my rules. He'd abandoned the steps altogether. And I loved it. My hands trembled as I reached for the button of his jeans, and he captured them with his own, halting their progress. "Hey," he whispered, using his nose to nudge my face up so we were looking into each other's eyes. "We don't have to do this, you know." I waited a beat, seeing the sincerity radiating from his gaze, and knowing that if I asked, he would wait as long as it took for me to be ready. "We really do," I said resolutely, reaching for the zipper of his jeans again. "I was hoping you'd say that," he grinned against my mouth. I couldn't respond because he was kissing me again. Within seconds, he'd rid me of my shorts and panties, and I was struggling to pull his jeans and boxers down his legs. He kicked them off impatiently, and then he was on top of me again, his mouth fused to mine. With one knee, he gently nudged my legs apart and settled in the space between them. I knew at that moment that my life was about to change irrevocably. I saw the change coming. I was standing in the middle of the tracks watching as the train bore down on me. I could have jumped the track. I even could have tried to outrun the damn thing, knowing it was futile, but still intent on making an attempt at escape. I did none of those things. I looked at Finn, and I knew that this would change everything. Not just between us, but for me as a person. For years, I'd used sex as nothing more than an avoidance tactic, a way to shut out my grief and bury the hurt. It was an escape. With my body engaged, my mind was, for once, at rest. This was different. I knew it in my soul, deep in the marrow of my bones, in the essence of my very self. Finn's words from earlier came back to me. "At some point, you have to let the life you should have had go and start living the one you've got." He was right. Now, as he gently